I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to the Curzon Film Podcast. In this episode, we talk to Prince Charles, the Queen of Victoria, and the person pulling their strings, all about Only You, and Jim Jarmusch's zombie comedy, The Dead Don't Die. I'm Jake Cunningham, and I have resurrected Sam Howlett and Kelly Powell to talk about what's on at the cinema this week. How are we doing?
Brains.
Good.
Brains.
I mean, well, hello.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. It's been a while. Yeah, it's good to have you both back. Kelly, you've been away in South Africa for 6 weeks or something.
Yeah, 4 weeks.
4 weeks. Amazing. Mm. And it was a good time.
It was a really good time, yeah.
But now you're back in your home, the cinema.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Excellent. All right. So we will start with Only You, which, although I'm not against it, I was surprised to hear that they had made a film about the race for the 1983 Christmas number one, ultimately secured by popular British a cappella band, The Flying Pickets.
Jake, let me correct you there.
What?
We're actually talking about Only You, the romantic drama starring Josh O'Connor and Lia Costa, directed by Harry Woodliffe.
Oh, that Only You. Oh gosh. Oh, well, I'll stick that idea in my back pocket and take it to Dexter Fletcher. I'm sure he'd do a great job with the legacy of The Flying Pickets. So, Only You, that Only You. Okay. Kelly, what is this Only You all about?
Right. So this Only You is about Eleanor and Jake, who meet by chance on New Year's Eve. They share a taxi together. And instead of going their separate ways, they start a passionate relationship, only to find out that Eleanor is 9 years older than Jake. But they are in it together. They love each other. They want to start a family. But that's actually where the story begins, because it's not so easy. And they decide to embark on a IVF treatment, but it doesn't go so well, and their relationship starts to suffer because of it.
Mm. And in a pretty bumper interview, we've got kind of the three key people for the film here. We've got Harry Woodliffe, the director, first time feature, Josh O'Connor and Lea Costa all in the interview. So we'll get to that very shortly, but we'll just quickly give some context on Only You. Because so, this one's come about through The Bureau, the production company here, who people would have seen that name ahead of like 45 Years and Weekend, like the Andrew Haig stuff. And this film, Only You, I think it had its first play either at like Venice or TIFF or something like the Autumn Festivals last year, and kind of whirled around gradually into cinemas now. And at the centre of it, you've got two actors who are very much rising stars, in particular Josh O'Connor, who I know has a lot of fans.
Yeah.
Yeah, he broke out in God's Own Country a few years back, which everyone fell in love with.
So good.
People are still talking about that film today. He's also in The Durrells, which if you have parents that are over 40, I'm sure they love that. Or if you are a parent over 40, it's good, isn't it?
Do you like it?
I've watched a few. It's all right.
Yeah.
It's
What's
fine.
It about?
It's a true story about a family that live, English family that live in Greece, and the youngest boy in the family grows up to be he writes a lot of books about animals, and the show is about him discovering the animals in Greece and also about the kind of the drama around the family living in Greece.
Wow, that is so parental viewing.
1 hour long each week, Jake.
Oh, wow.
Solid. And he's also going to be Prince Charles.
He's also Prince Charles.
Yeah, in The Crown.
Yes.
And in lots of other things as well.
Yeah.
And alongside him is Leia Costa.
Yeah. And she obviously is known for Victoria, the one take wonder. And she's also in Dan Fogelman's new film, Life Itself.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, lots of, like, two big films in a certain, like, circuit of popularity, kind of bringing together their two stars here and putting them into, like, into a couple that is totally believable, which we will get into. Yeah, they're both really talented, and I'm sure people will be looking out for what they're going to be doing next. And I think it's time to probably talk to them. Kelly, you were lucky enough to sit down with the director and the two stars.
Yeah, yeah. So I met with them at LFF last year. I thought it was only going to be the two actors, but Harry Woodliffe was there. Surprise. And it was a really good interview with all three of them. They're all very passionate about the film. And I spoke to them a little bit about, you know, the intensity of the relationship between them and how that was as actors, and where sort of Harry's inspiration came to talk about this topic. So I hope you enjoy. Welcome to the Curzon Film Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. This film is such an intimate portrayal of this couple going through something very personal, and it really sort of hinges on the collaboration and the connection between the two leads. But maybe I can start with you, Harry, and just ask, where did the inspiration for the story come from? And what made you want to tell this story as your directorial, you know, feature debut?
I wanted to write a really intimate relationship story that felt raw and real, and like you were going home with this couple and you were a fly on the wall. And I also wanted to write about a couple facing something difficult together and not imploding, but staying together as a team. And I wanted to write about not having a child and how that feels.
Yeah, well, that definitely comes across, I think, very successfully. So,
thank you.
So congratulations. And what was it like for you with your collaboration work? Because obviously the film hinges on, you know, the relationship. So what kind of prep work did you guys put in? Were there lots of rehearsals beforehand, and how did you find it?
We didn't rehearse. We had one day that we were, I think we were reading through the scenes one day. We were supposed to be rehearsing for a week.
Yeah.
That's right.
But there was the hurricane.
But, okay.
Yeah.
So we met on Friday and we were starting shooting on Monday.
Oh,
and
wow.
Weekend was weekend. We didn't work through the weekend.
No, because you were doing fittings.
Fittings.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But we talked on the phone. I talked with Lyra and Josh separately on the phone for actually quite a lot. Yeah. And we sort of put aside a couple of hours or something and say, let's talk about the next 20 pages in a week. So I did that with them separately.
Okay. And was the film shot chronologically, or did you sort of jump around for scheduling purposes, or?
We jumped around to a degree, but we started off doing all the stuff that's in the flat.
Okay.
So we started at the beginning of the story through all the scenes of them getting together in the flat, and then we moved on chronologically through all the scenes of them breaking up together in the flat.
Oh.
So we sort of did the whole relationship in the flat, and then we went out of the flat to locations.
Okay.
It felt kind of chronological.
Yeah,
in
it did
that,
actually,
right?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And how did that like impact the way that you guys sort of engaged with the characters and your emotional sort of trajectory through the film, shooting it?
I think to be on the flat the first 2 weeks was perfect for us to get Jake and Elena, and then the rest felt easy after that, I think.
I mean, it's interesting, like, seeing these guys coming in, like, the first week, they're really playful, everyone was they're both in a really good mood. And then when we got to the second week and it was all splitting up, it was like two different actors coming in. You know, you think, you think that's just them, but actually it was them engaging with the spirit of where we were up to with their story. though it was the second week was definitely different to the first week, you know. The yeah. first week they were lounging about in bed with each other, you know, between the scenes or mm-hmm. sitting jokes. And chatting, making jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second week when there were the arguments, they'd be sat separately not in different talking. Rooms, oh, really? Not talking, listening to music on their own. And yeah, wow. So I think it really worked really well.
And there's another thing which we were talking about just earlier about something that Harry created really nicely in this film is this sense of like nostalgia mm-hmm. that you get in a relationship. And so, you know, for instance, by shooting that first scene, for instance, in the flat where he plays the Elvis Costello or and uses there are certain bits of dialogue that Harry then reintroduces again,
yeah.
you know, that Jake uses to try and rejig that relationship back yeah. or restart it. And by shooting it in as close to chronological order as you can, it means that suddenly that they are kind of shared memories anyway.
Yeah.
So when we revisit it, it sort of does have a lot of feeling
yeah.
to it. Do you know what I mean? And
yeah, because also you're in this like little capsule of time where just 2 weeks of a shoot is a lot. It's sort of a long
yeah,
time, isn't
definitely.
It?
Yeah. yeah.
So you are already reminiscing on day two by the time you're on, you know,
yeah.
day
yeah,
eight.
And it's such an intimate thing anyway, making a film yeah. together and this kind of film as well, you know, you... exploring each other as the characters kind of are as well. So I think you feel that in the film, so it's very well done. So IVF isn't really explored that much on screen, you know, in such a way, like you explore this couple's troubles with trying to conceive, and you really do delve deep into what it means to them, and like, you know, you see both of them go through their respective sort of arc, you know, in how to deal with this, and you sort of really get a sense of like what it might feel like to a couple who really wants this and can't achieve it, and also the how hard IVF actually is, you know, when you're doing it, the, you know, when you see the bruises on your stomach when you're trying to do it, and like how much it actually takes to make that decision in the first place. I wanted to know if you guys did any kind of research by talking to couples who might have gone through a similar sort of thing, or what kind of prep work did you do to sort of get into that mindset of this couple going through this thing?
Maya, you read articles, didn't you? Like I'd send you stuff, and then you also listened to music while you read some of the articles, and then listened to the same music. I remember you saying this article that you sent to me really spoke to me, and this is what I listened to at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Josh saying, I feel like I'm naive to it, and I just want to come to it when I come to it in the film without knowing too much, if that's right.
Yeah, which I think is, for me, it was definitely about putting Jake's attention onto Elena, because I think some of the confusion in that relationship comes from the fact that Jake is trying to serve a purpose to Elena, trying to sort of make everything all right, whilst not really taking the time to sit down and try and actually understand what it is that she's going through, and that's where the confusion comes. So in some ways, they didn't really want to like prep anything with that and just put everything on her.
And so feel it organically as it came.
Yeah.
Okay.
I also didn't want to know too much because she doesn't know actually too much.
Mm.
But I thought that for the emotions, I didn't remember about the music.
Mm.
Now you're talking about it, I remember.
Yeah.
It's true, I attached like music to emotions while reading, but just on set, not reading anything else, just listening to that music.
Okay.
To get the emotion.
Yeah.
Because it's more important what she's feeling than the process.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that you could see that the role required a lot of your, you know, it was an emotional roller coaster, I think. What was it like for you to play someone going through such a hectic time in their life? Was it taxing on you? How did you prepare? How did you navigate that?
It's very hard for me to answer these kind of questions because I trust my team a lot.
Mm.
So I think that if I'm doing a movie with another actor or another director, my work is so different.
Mm.
So I don't know actually how to say that.
Okay, it's okay.
It was just, I really felt like we were just in a bubble of...
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, when we did the big argument as well, like, it was quite hard watching them argue over and over again
yeah.
whilst watching it in the monitor. it was okay the first time, but it was quite traumatic, more traumatic than I expected, watching a couple that we'd all created together who had such a lovely thing then being so sort of destructive to each other.
Mm.
I thought that was interesting to me. Like, mm. I was surprised by how uncomfortable I felt with it. And Josh shouted and lost his voice. He lost his voice.
Yeah, it was weird because it's like that thing, obviously, when you're watching this film, and I'm now, having watched it now, you are experiencing their relationship, right? But for us, the relationship wasn't just Jake and Elena, it was with Harry and Xavier, the DP. And so I remember that day where we had the argument, so Harry called cut, and then you see like Xavier look really upset. And it's all right. Yeah. We'll be okay tomorrow.
All kind of going through the emotions together.
But that means, I think that's what was really good about this job, is that when you're collaborating with anyone, you're all trying to get the best out of each other.
Yeah.
And so as an actor's job is to kind of fulfill the imagination of Harry's, and Harry is working constantly to see like what it is that Josh needs to hear, or what it is that Lyra needs to hear to get this out of, do you know what I mean? And so it's like we're all dancing with each other.
Yeah.
And it's not often that it works as smoothly as it did with us.
Like. Yeah. And was it very much, so the creation of the script, was it like something that you stuck to as a director, you know, going from the writing seat into the directing seat? Did you stick to the script, or was it like a workshopped process, more of a collaboration? Did it end up changing a lot as you went?
I stuck to the script, but also during the phone calls that I had with Lyra and Josh, I went away and did rewrites off the back of that.
Okay.
There were little rewrites during the process, weren't there, where I'd come and say, I'm just going to change this bit and that bit. It was scripted, but it was a change quite late on. For instance, I remember Josh us talking about the taxi journey, and you saying, I don't think he's a predatory kind of man. I don't think he goes into that taxi journey feeling like, yeah, I want to take this woman home. And then I remember speaking to Lyra and going, yeah, I don't think I'm in the mood to meet anyone. I'm like, okay, then neither of them.
we can't not let them meet.
Yeah, it's like,
the only other option there is like,
but then I worked with that. I loved it that they're both not in the mood, but then something happens. Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Mm.
It totally changes that scene, actually. Watching that back, I was really surprised because I sort of forgot that we changed that.
Mm.
But it is, you're right, it's like a really kind of surprising moment, because you've got these two people who don't really want to share a taxi, but it's sort of necessary.
Yeah,
and that turns into this beautiful relationship. Yeah.
But that's something very beautiful. You were working with me and then working with him, because they didn't need to know stuff. So I think that was a good method.
Yeah.
Like, we were working together very close, and you were, and then we
discovered.
I love that about it, that I kind of, you both had your own points of view, and then I didn't really the other person's point of view.
I
kept that quite separate. I didn't have like discussions where I was like, you're feeling this and you're feeling that. I also think because of those conversations, we were all very sort of, in a weird way, very well prepared, even though we hadn't had rehearsal as such together.
Mm.
You both very clearly knew where your heads were in those scenes.
Yeah. I think, and it did feel super authentic. Like, all throughout, really, you felt like these people were going through these things.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. And I wanted to ask you, how has it been seeing the reaction to the film here in Britain, you know, at the festival? Did you watch it with an audience as well?
It's only tonight.
So, my word. Okay, so that's going to be exciting.
Yeah.
Okay, that's really cool.
I've only had sort of screenings for our execs. So we had screenings when we invited about, like, 10 people came and watched it. That was interesting, and did sort of questions afterwards. And I love like watching people's face. I always sit at the back and watch people's faces.
That's cool.
And yeah, it's quite, there was quite a lot of smiling through the first half, like generally I've noticed, and less smiling. But like sort of laughter and people engaging in the excitement of the new relationship. Yeah.
And what does it feel like for you, Harry, having your film played, it's your first feature, and is it like daunting, exciting?
Sort of daunting and exciting, and strangely abstract until you're there as well, I think, you know, until you sort of, until I'm sat there with an audience watching it. It's quite an odd process in a way, because you know, each stage you shoot and then you edit, and it's so intense, and then you sort of gradually finish and you have your grade and you have your sound mix, and then it's kind of over, and then you wait. So it's odd, and I think it really is about in enjoying the process each step of the way as well.
Yeah, of course.
You know, just little the moments where I remember just putting the title sequence on. I was just, it's so exciting, you know, watching the title sequence go up or
see it come together.
It's like, I think, there's sort of been magical moments all the way. So,
Oh, wow. Well,
yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And Josh, your last film, God's Own Country, where people might know you from, you know, was also received really beautifully, and you kind of have seemed to become the man of the moment for British independent film. And I wanted to know, like, what are you sort of looking for in your next project? Are you happy to, like, stay in your wheelhouse, or are you looking for something, like, a little bit outside of it, or
stay in my
your wheelhouse? Like, this seems to be a very, like, beautiful comfort zone that you fit very nicely into. Yeah. You're such believable characters.
I don't know, actually. Yeah, I think certainly it's kind of what excites me is when you meet someone like I did with Harry and like I did with Francis, mm-hmm. and since this film, kind of worked with some really cool people. And I think what happens is I always think that the relationship that you build, irrespective of the end product, because you can't, I don't tend to think about that.
It's
the relationships you build with people in that space of time and collaboration is so exciting, and I always really enjoy that. So I kind of don't think much beyond that. It's just, you know, if I meet someone and there's like a spark and it's really exciting and a story that I'm like, oh, I'd like to see that, or I'd like to do that, then I'll kind of go that way.
So
I guess in answer to your question, I'm sort of not really planning anything, but I'm certainly enjoying being the man of the moment. Definitely enjoying.
There's a question that I wanted to ask you at the beginning, actually, and I just totally forgot about it because we're having such a nice conversation. But I wanted to know what when you know, first read the script as actors, what drew you to the characters that you sort of were going to be portraying? What about the realism of them that, you know, you wanted, that excited you about the film?
I actually saw Harry's short film, Knits, and I loved it. And I read the script and I knew that there was so much more to learn about it that I was not aware of it. And then I had a conversation with her, and then that was confirmation that this is going to be very interesting for you because you don't know this story at all.
Yeah.
And I think that big interrogation mark was what it was like, and also because I saw the short film, it was she's cool. It's like it's gonna be cool. You're gonna love this director.
Right. Yeah.
So that was it for me.
Okay.
Yeah, I think actually I forget that I'd seen Harry's short film, and Harry definitely, you could see that there was like a visual language there that was really clear. But for me, for Jake, it was just I saw someone who was in many ways uncomplicated. Not to be confused with like uninteresting,
because
so complex, but uncomplicated insofar as he's not self-conscious, and he is, a lot of his conversations, the way Harry'd written him, was all about the other person and accommodating and trying to, but sometimes that would sort of turn into a sort of selfishness, but he certainly didn't mean that, and I found that really endearing. So that was kind of why I fell in love with Jake. Okay.
And Harry, what's next for you? Have you got something else on the horizon?
I've got another feature with Tristan Golliger at the Bureau to hopefully shoot next summer.
Oh, wow, okay.
And I should probably do something in the interim, I think.
Are you wanting to write more as well, just as a...
Yeah, I'd love to sort of get writing, I think, as well, keeping the momentum going. So writing one whilst you know the other's coming up, I think, is really important. Just to keep going.
Yeah. Well, I certainly want to see your next film, so please do keep going.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for joining
Thanks
us.
So
Thank
much.
You.
Thanks Thank you.
For the opportunity.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, thank you, Harry, Josh, and Leia. Let's get into those two first, because I think without these two actors, these two performances, this film doesn't hang together. It's totally reliant on them, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I don't know if the film is improvised, but there are moments that feel improvised, but in a really good way. Like, especially when they first meet in the cab and when they're back to their flat later. And I know that because of Victoria, because that film is all improvised, I just had it in my head that this one was as well. And Lia was really good at that. And so it just felt, that means it just felt so natural between the two of them.
Yeah, and they're both incredibly charismatic actors, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely. Their chemistry is super believable, and they're both really, really charismatic actors in and of themselves. So when they come together, it's really enticing to watch, especially in the beginning when the relationship sort of flies forward. As you said, you kind of have to buy into that in order to care about their story. Yeah. And I think that works really well.
Yeah, it is a race, the first 15 minutes of this film, because Harry Whitliff clearly wants to focus on this idea of family and IVF. That's the focus on it, rather than it being a will they, won't they romance story. It is still incredibly romantic, and it does still have those beats of a romance film. But the central thing is this pursuit of pregnancy. Yeah.
Well, I liked the structure of those first like 15, 20 minutes as well, where you kind of, it cuts out things that happen and skips to the next thing without explaining what just happened. So
just cut to him moving in.
So they meet in the cab and then they say goodbye, and the next scene is him back at her flat. So you know that something's happened, that they've started talking again after the cab journey to get back to the flat, but we don't need to see it. You know, it just goes straight there, which is really a really nice way of getting through the, and it goes through quite a few months like this kind of staccato, this bit cut, you don't know however long.
It's Harry Whitliff's knowledge of a romance genre and her understanding of our knowledge of that genre that you can cut those sections out, and we are so familiar with it that we know what's happened.
Yeah.
Like, and that's what allows that opening 15 minutes to be so condensed and so fast and incredibly energetic. Like, it's quite a rush, and you do feel swept up in the thrill of new romance because of that. And then it does just, it slows down once it's got them set up, and you can believe that dynamic, you believe their relationship, and then we ease into the IVF storyline. How did that sit for you?
Yeah, I think that as Sam said, that like, it's sort of, there's a flow in the beginning. You know, there's a the sort of romantic ideals, and we kind of buy into that, and we kind of are going along, as you said, Jake, at like quite a quick pace, and we get swept up in that. And then the minute it starts to get serious, it slows down. And then even further down the line, when they are struggling with the IVF not working, and then it's affecting their relationship, the film like sort of starts to struggle itself. I think that it mirrors the narrative in a very interesting way. And it starts to make us feel a little bit like, you know, we're uncomfortable or upset, or it's not the same easiness that we had in the beginning.
That opening, it's exciting to see these moments of intimacy that perhaps we're not privy to see in a lot of other couples in the real world.
Yeah.
And that's very nice. And then we are almost given the same level of intimacy for the later scenes that are harder to watch,
mm.
and that it makes it quite grueling. Mm, even definitely. Though we've in a way been given the same amount of access that we have
yeah.
at the start of the film as
exactly.
well.
Yeah.
And yeah, the pace does slow, and you do feel that dread and anxiety that
and the disappointment.
Yeah,
you know?
that's there between them.
Well, and there's a bit as well at the lowest point of their relationship where he tries to recreate the night they first met. Like, he puts on the same song, he says the exact same things to try and get her to forget about the IVF stuff and just kind of, let's just have fun, let's just have a night. And it's a really nice way of just kind of reminding you what happened earlier mm. and all that's happened to make this happen now.
Yeah.
And it's a nice, I know it's like an obvious thing, but this same setting, the same mood is just a completely different experience for the viewer and for them.
Yeah. And it also comes down to how it's all put together, how it's been aimed. And I think particularly that is Shabir Kirshner's cinematography. Mm. Like, even those two scenes, one is this warm, glowing,
yeah.
almost like Wham! Christmas yeah. music video of warmth and intimacy.
Yeah.
And then it's suddenly colder, it's starker.
Yeah.
And it's a bit more distant. They were the cinematographer behind Skate Kitchen as well, and which is like you're trying to photograph like cool sunburn New York skaters mm. and then also Glasgow in the winter, but somehow manages to bring mm. a similar kind of glow to both of
yeah.
them. So for the budget of Only You, which is very small, it looks very good as well.
Yeah,
I think. And
I think it's a testament to how good Harry is, because it's a new story, that it's a modern take on a love story. These things are happening in our everyday lives, you know. And the fact that she's older isn't an issue, other than the fact that the fertility thing is an issue, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
I just think it's a great modern take on a romantic movie.
Also,
yeah.
I was surprised at how little the film judges the characters, because I thought the film would go the angle like, this is what happens when you rush in kind of thing, because the age gap is there and he is perhaps, there's a lot of talk that he's not ready for this kind of relationship because he's so young. And I thought the film would kind of go into a bit like, this is what happens when, you know, fools rush in kind of thing, but it really doesn't.
No.
It's very much like, this is fine.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter that they're rushing into having kids. It's not like, it's not a stupid decision for him to spontaneously say, let's have kids, which I think a lot of films would treat that decision as a bad move, you know?
Mm.
Yeah,
this
yeah.
film is very much like, this is a natural, normal thing that this couple would do this then.
Yeah. Yeah. I think as a pairing to Private Life, I think it's well worth seeking out as well. That's online if you want to check it out. But definitely if you're a fan of God's Own Country, Victoria, want to check out what those leads have been up to since then, do check out Only You. It's going to be in cinemas, but it's also on Curzon Home Cinema as well. So if you've not got a screen nearby playing it, you can always watch it on demand as well. All right, so moving on from Only You to a very, very different film, The Dead Don't Die. This is the new one from Jim Jarmusch. Sam, tell us a little bit about this one.
So, yeah, Jim Jarmusch's latest film. We are set in the fictional town of Centerville, which is in the center of America. And we just slowly get introduced to the inhabitants of Centerville. So we have the three cops, so Adam Driver, Bill Murray and Chloe Svingi. We've got a redneck farmer played by Steve Buscemi, a local hermit played by Tom Waits. We've also got Caleb Landry-Jones as a kind of comic book store owner. Danny Glover is there. There's loads of these weird, like, oh, that guy.
Are you Tilda Swinton?
Tilda Swinton,
as a samurai mortician.
Tilda Swinton as a Scottish samurai sword-wielding mortician. And then eventually weird things start to happen. People's phones aren't working. Their watches aren't working. The sun has not set yet. The moon has a weird purple glow. And importantly, the dead start rising out of their graves.
They really do.
The dead do not die in this film.
And it's the title song.
Yeah,
it is the theme song.
Yeah. So how are we feeling going into this? Because Jim Jarmusch, I know, is... will divide a lot of people already, and I think this one is only going to sever that divide
yeah.
further.
Well, I was super excited. Just, I think, look, this film has been marketed very much on the cast alone,
yeah.
And I was like in for it. I was like, yeah, I want to see that film very much. I like Jarmusch's stuff, especially his earlier stuff, so I was in for it already, but the cast was, I was I was keen to see where how it played out.
Yeah, Sam, ahead of this recording, you said, oh, yeah, I'm more a fan of his 90s work. so I'm guessing you weren't excited for this one, yeah. It's just like
well, Jake, I studied film at university, so... I do prefer
true cinephile.
Exactly. Yeah, I haven't seen all of them. I think I've seen about six. So I've seen like Ghost Dog is great. Night on Earth is really good. If you haven't seen Night on Earth, that's the one where it's like four or five different stories of like taxi drivers in different cities.
Mm. Mystery Train's also good.
Mystery Train's great. Dead Man is great. And then yeah,
Patterson.
Yeah, Patterson's really cool as well. Only Lovers Left Alive is good.
He swings and he misses.
He swings and he misses. But then. You know, it's been, when was Patterson, like 2016?
Yeah, it's been a
good few years. And just the sentence, a Jim Jarmusch zombie film with Adam Driver and Bill Murray is like, well, obviously I'm going to see that.
It's catnip. Mm.
It's catnip. Mm. Like, I was never not going to see this film.
Yeah.
For the podcast, I'd pay a lot of money to see this film.
Yeah, I think a lot of people will be going to see this. And I think in a way it's been presented as his most mainstream thing.
Absolutely.
Like, there are like billboards and tube adverts for this, which maybe like your Patterson audience, although there are big fans of it out there, they're not going to come out in the same way that they will for Kylo Ren killing zombies.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I was saying to you guys earlier, like, I think if you spoke to someone who doesn't really know who Jim Jarmusch is, they'd still know this film. They'd be like, oh yeah, The Dead Don't Die. That's the zombie film with Adam Driver. Mm. They're not going to know Patterson, if you know what I mean. Like, this is the film for people that haven't seen a single Jim Jarmusch film that they will go to this, I think, because it's a genre film. It's a comedy film. It's got this cast. It has everything going for it to get people in.
Yeah. And central to this is the core trio of cops, played by Adam Driver, Bill Murray and Chloe Sevigny. And I think the standout here is Adam Driver.
Oh, he's so good.
He is superb in this. I love when people let him be funny.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he can handle it so well because he has such a tough job in this film because he is the funniest lines, but he has to deliver them all completely straight whilst the whole world is like going mad around him.
Yeah.
And even like you can see Bill Murray cracking at certain points. And he manages just to keep it stony the whole way through.
Because at least we'll talk about Tilda Swinton in a bit, but at least she gets to be let off the leash and just go full rein, full on broad comedy. Whereas he has to be really, like you say, stony, deadpan, basically like Jarmusch-y.
Yeah, and so he's constantly saying, this isn't going to end well.
It won't end well.
And he has to...
Yeah.
The sight of Adam Driver speedily parking in a small red smart car, that is the cinematic event of the year.
That's the size of Adam Driver's shoe.
Yeah. the ticket price alone is worth it for the image of Adam Driver in a smart
car.
Like
someone riding a bumper car.
Yeah.
Also, when he first sees the... the aftermath of a zombie attack, the first thing he says is, oh, yuck.
He says that. That's his go-to line. Oh, yuck.
Oh, yuck.
But it's all got that like kind of slow-paced middle America reaction to a zombie thing that you'd expect.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, everyone's like, oh.
It's like the sun hasn't set and it's 9 p.m. and no one's really questioning that. It's just something that's happening. And this is where the film is at its strongest because the first hour...
It's a long time before you see a zombie.
It's that.
Yeah.
It's just people having these conversations and saying things like, that's a bit weird. it's all super chilled out. I know this has had mixed reviews going in, and I'm sure, as I said, it will divide people going to watch it as well. I absolutely love just staying in Centerville.
Yeah, I like Centerville. Centerville's cool.
Because we meet the core policeman at the start, but then we get introduced to all of the support over kind of one 20-25 minute sequence before we go back to the police again. And you've got all this, like even like Selena Gomez. A couple of Cleveland hipsters, as they're known.
RZA.
Yeah.
From Wu-Tang.
Yes, who is running the delivery service WPS. And all of these people, they completely nail it in their little moments.
I know, yeah.
Tom
it's like
Waits.
A weird sketch show. Yeah.
It's exactly like a weird sketch show. And I think, for better or for worse, maybe Jim Jarmusch went into a meeting and said, I can get these people and I want to do zombies. And they just gave him the money.
Yeah.
And he hadn't maybe figured out what to do with it. He just knew what he wanted to do roughly.
Yeah.
And maybe at some points it got away from him.
Yeah. I mean, I think, towards the end, it sort of starts to unravel. But I kind of likened it to to dying by a zombie, basically. It's like the slow build, and then and they're coming towards you really slowly, and you know what's going to happen. It's all going to end really badly, and it kind of does. The film itself as well. Kind of like loses itself a little bit to the end for me, and like some weird stuff happens that's sort of seems out of the narrative story world.
Yeah. And he had trouble on the production as well. It should have been simple, but it turned into a nightmare. Adam Driver only had 3 weeks, and then when they got to set, it was raining constantly. He got the flu, then broke a toe.
Yeah.
And then they had to rush the edit to get it in time for Cannes.
Yeah.
And like, you can tell in a way, like, there are genuinely plot points that disappear.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But I think, in a way, this totally works if the film is read as Jim Jarmusch directing an Ed Wood film.
Yeah.
I think there is a bit involving some extraterrestrial activity.
Sure.
And that, for me, is totally like in a 50s sci-fi when they would look around the set and be like, what are the other films got? Yeah. What can we borrow from another set? Oh, right, they've got this. Can we just put that into a scene so we can get some more length out of the film?
Yeah.
And it's almost like a collection of that. Right, we'll keep it minimal sets. We'll have the police station. We'll have the cemetery.
Yeah.
We'll kind of just rotate these sets.
Mm.
And it's him doing a high budget, low budget zombie film with an incredible cast.
It absolutely nails it. This film works as a B movie pastiche horror comedy with Jim Jarmusch performances and Jim Jarmusch dialogue. That's perfect.
Yeah.
I think where the film is gonna divide people and where is the allegory aspect of this film, because there's a lot of stuff about the reason the zombies are rising is because of polar fracking and climate change deniers, and there's all
consumerism.
This
correlation of zombies to materialism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Zombies say Wi-Fi instead of brains. And like, this is very much Jim Jarmusch's reaction to sort of Trump's America. Steve Buscemi wears a red cap that says, keep America white again.
Mm.
You know, that kind of stuff, I felt like, we get it.
Yeah.
We don't need to. This is too much.
Yeah.
But it's too much. And also, this film is kind of, not a parody of, but this film was very referential to those kind of George A. Romero zombie films like Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead. And those films already did that. They used the horror genre to kind of comment on the problems with society at the time. And I guess this is just Jarmusch doing the same thing X years later.
Yeah, and in a way,
not quite as subtly.
But because the film is quite knowing and references Romero, it's like,
it clashes.
If I reference it, does that forgive me for doing it?
Yeah, yeah.
And perhaps it doesn't. But that is The Dead Don't Die, and that's in cinemas this week. So do go and check that out. Definitely one for fans of the more genre-y Jarmusch stuff, like Only Love Is Left Alive, for sure. But then,
I think if you like Shaun of the Dead, you'll like this as well.
Yeah.
It's like high pastiche horror that also does its own thing.
But Shaun of the Dead operates a high energy, extremely high energy.
This is low energy. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For sure. All right, so that's what's on at the cinema this week. What about On Demand, Sam?
Well, On Demand, you can watch Only You. You can also watch our Jim Jarmusch collection. So some of those films we mentioned just then. So Dead Man, Only Lovers Left Alive, Patterson, they're all on there. You can catch up on your Jarmusch before you see this one.
Yeah, and people can still check out In Fabric.
Yeah,
if they still want some horror with a lot of red in it.
Yeah, yeah. Sure.
And if you do want to check out In Fabric, that's the new one from Peter Strickland. Do go back and listen to our Strickland on Strickland podcast series, where we talk to the director about all of his films up to this point. And we've got some special events coming up too, as well. Isn't that right, Kelly?
Yeah, we do. We've got a book club screening of Call Me By Your Name at Curzon Soho. And that will be on the 17th of July. And that's going to include a Skype Q&A with the author of the book, Andre Assaman. And he's going to be talking about his sequel to Call Me By Your Name called Find Me. And if you go along to that event, you will also receive a free copy of the new book.
That's insane. There are so many Call Me By Your Name stands out there. Guys, you can get the sequel.
Yeah.
Come to the event.
Come to the event. That's going to be Wednesday the 17th at 6:10 p.m. at Curzon Soho. And then we also have an opening night Q&A of Only You at Curzon Bloomsbury. And that's going to include a post-screening Q&A with Harry Whitliff, the director. And that's going to be on the opening night, Friday the 12th of July at 6:15 at Bloomsbury.
Lovely. And if you want to make sure you get tickets, go to curzoncinemas.com/events to pick those up. If you've got any thoughts on Only You or The Dead Don't Die, do let us know by tweeting at Curzon Cinemas. Or you can tweet us all directly as well. I'm there at Jake H. Cunningham. Sam, you're over there as well.
I'm over there at samhowlett_1.
And Kelly, you are on Twitter too.
Yeah, KS_Powell.
And if it's your first time listening to the show, do subscribe. You can do so on iTunes, Acast, Spotify, literally wherever podcasts happen, you can find us there. And when you're there, leave us a review or a comment. That would be absolutely wonderful. But I think that's about it. Until then,
brains.
Coffee.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.